Hey everyone, this is John, and this is the Nintendo Show, the best damn Nintendo podcast on the internet. We got another installment of our running series of Space Worlds about the Alien franchise. This time I'm taking the reins to discuss the second movie in the series, Aliens. Do expect spoilers. Alright, so we're moving over to Aliens in our marathon of sorts of the Alien franchise.
There we are.
So Alien came out in 1979, which is... No, yes, Alien came out in 1979. Aliens is 1986. So 7 years later, getting the second installment in this franchise.
Yeah.
This one was directed by James Cameron.
Yes.
What?
You'll notice because everything's blue.
But another guy who's pretty heavily steeped in sci-fi. So before... Aliens, he was probably... What do you think he was most well-known for at that point? Maybe Terminator?
He's known for one movie, Terminator, really.
Yeah.
I mean, because he did Piranha 2, but I don't think anyone cares
That's
about...
That's the dude that did Avatar, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yeah. But he also... He does movies that start with the letter T and the letter A. So he did Aliens, The Abyss, Terminator, Terminator 2, True Lies, and Titanic.
Was it called The Avatar or Avatar? Yeah. Oh, Avatar. That's another A.
Wow. Fucking Avatar. One of the most overrated movies ever. And there's like fucking four more coming.
He made a documentary called
Oh,
Aliens
there's four more coming?
Yeah. Those are his
Dear
next,
God,
those are his next projects. And yeah. He's actually staggered them as far as release dates go. Where it's 2018, 2020, 22, 23.
And it's amazing that these are his next... Like, Avatar was in 2009.
Yeah.
Like, Avatar 2 is scheduled for 2018. Like, I don't know.
And that's not something that's aged well. If anything, people have gotten over the bombast and hype from its initial release of being the most expensive movie ever made. You know,
I think the other big thing was this when it first came out. They didn't. That's when like 3D first came out, right? It was like one of the early
it was one of the revivals of 3D.
Yeah, one of the when. It supposedly was like good and everybody was freaking the shit out about it.
Like they it wasn't like the red and the blue lenses on your glasses anymore. It was a little bit more legit.
This is turning into a dual Space Worlds movie review.
And anyway.
Because Avatar is a space one,
I guess it sort of is a space.
We've got plenty of good space movies to talk about.
Right.
We don't have to talk about Avatar.
But James Cameron
could talk a lot about that movie, I don't know why.
But James Cameron, like you mentioned, he kind of is all about, he does a lot of like spectacle.
The word
he uses is like bombastic.
One of the things I want to talk about with Aliens is one of the things that makes him such a great director is his command of like set pieces.
Mm-hmm.
He knows how to make a really fucking awesome set piece.
Yeah.
Like, things that really just interest you. You know, think of like Terminator 2, the amazing 18-wheeler chase that happens in it. Like how incredible that sequence is. Or like in True Lies when they do the, what is it? The storming of like the terrorist facility. Like how great that sequence is. Like I mean, it's every one of his movies he shows off that he really knows how to put together a solid set piece and give you something really entertaining that you'll walk away from the film remembering.
And he probably wasn't like as well known for that sort of thing at this point in his career, but he's an interesting choice for a director because where you have like the first Alien movie, which is the opposite of that. It's very reserved in its action set pieces. And then you have James Cameron just totally taking a balls to the wall action movie, but it still retains a lot of the memorable elements of an Alien franchise. Like you have, of course, one of the big crux of the movie is you have like, it's more than one alien. You have swarms of these things going at you, but you get to see all of these things attacking at once, but it doesn't really feel less dangerous. Like one of the risks you could run in doing that is like it turns into Starship Troopers where it's a meat grinder and like all these aliens are running at your guys with guns, you're just mowing them down.
Sure.
You don't lose that sense of danger with the xenomorph as you probably could have run the risk of doing. So he handles it very well.
Well, one of the interesting things I think to bring up about this is that this is by far the longest runtime of any of the Alien franchise. This clocks in at almost 3 hours long, and having watched it a couple times now, you'll notice that there's a good hour of movie before you even see an alien.
Yeah.
Like, they spent a lot of time getting you comfortable with the crew, and the crew is awesome. Like, because that's the other big difference, is that these aren't a bunch of, like, miners, or, like, people that are harvesting space minerals. These are hardcore,
space
like, commandos. These are space marines.
These people are trained to kill.
Which one are we talking about, the first one or the
second one? Aliens. The second one.
Yeah. We already did Alien.
Dear God, that's how you differentiate Alien Aliens.
Yeah, that's the sequel.
Yeah. Wow, that's terrible.
This is the letter S.
Alien 3 is like, I should call it More Aliens.
So it's Alien 3
and More Aliens. It's most aliens.
They really should have. That would be great. It's Alien really, 3, it was the same way. It took for a while after...
Yeah.
Sure. Back up with that. So, I mean, it was the same thing with Alien 3.
And we're going to get to Alien 3, but one of the also interesting distinctions between Aliens and Alien 3 is that you have the in Aliens, you have this cast of characters where everyone is really memorable. Everyone sort of has a function and an identity. Whereas in Alien 3, a lot of times, you just have a lot of meat for the grinder.
And yes, that's true.
So,
well, I also think
whose main function is to die.
We can talk about like the breakdown of the cast later on, but I think
shirt.
The second best character in all of Aliens franchise is in this movie.
Well, are you talking about Bishop?
No.
Oh, damn it. I love Bishop.
I think that's one of the more interesting dynamics is her relationship with the synthetics.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, it's the first one, Ian Holm's character in the first one flips out and starts murdering people on the ship. And it's this interesting...
Well, it's one of the returning elements of the franchise. You always have some sort of synthetic presence.
Yeah, and in this case, Bishop totally redeems the flaws of the first one and even acknowledges that, like, it was an older model that freaked out on her. And he even brings up Asimov's laws associated with artificial intelligence, that they're basically pre-built to not even be able to harm a human being. If harm were to come to a human being and they could put themselves between it, they would sacrifice themselves just to protect a human.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so it seems like a lot more thought and purpose has gone into the construction of the artificial intelligence that they use. And at face value, it seems like there's also a lot more thought and purpose into having Colonial Marines do the fighting here, or to try to be the first ones that meet this potential alien thing head on. And it doesn't, of course.
Yeah,
that doesn't go according to
plan. Doesn't go well. No. So let's actually start at the beginning here. So the movie starts with Ripley basically being revived from her escape pod from the ship that she escapes from. And the name of the ship escapes me at the moment. What's the Nostromus?
The Nostromo, yeah.
I'm not exactly sure how much time has passed, but they allude to a lot of time passing.
I think it's about 80... No, not 80 years. Probably like 60 years.
Yeah, because they
established that she had a daughter.
Right.
I don't know if it was even brought up in Alien. I feel like it wasn't. Or if it was, it must have been like the littlest footnote.
I don't remember being brought up either.
They basically established that, hey, you've been out of it for a really long time. Long enough for your little daughter to grow up, grow old, and die.
Yeah.
So
you, early on, you
reestablish. Here's your cat. Have your cat back. Hey, here's a familiar face. Paul Reiser stumbles into the scene, like, hey, you know, woke you up. I work for the company that almost got you killed, but here's your kitty cat.
No hard feelings.
This is the douchiest character.
I do want to get to Paul Reiser, but first, they immediately start bringing up those themes of motherhood again. Because, like, hey, guess what? You don't have a kid anymore. And then later on, once you get to planet LV-426, which is the planet they're going fucking back to for some reason.
Yeah.
And you meet this character, this little girl character, Newt. I think she's supposed to be like 9 or 10 years old.
Her name is Newt?
Yeah, her name is Newt.
Interesting. Sure. Carrie Henn is the name of the young actress that plays her. This is her one and only...
no other credits.
Credit. She bailed out of acting after this.
Mm-hmm. So...
Yep.
And Sigourney Weaver, Ripley, becomes a sort of surrogate mother to her.
Yeah.
So you have that whole theme running throughout the entire movie. But yeah, Paul Reiser plays the character Burke.
There's a lot of, like, I mean, to me it makes me think that there's so much more going on with this character than him just being this empty suit jerk that you can hate as being, you know, one of the representatives of the company, of the Wayland Corp, the ones that are responsible for all of this.
Another returning element.
And the fact that he goes on this mission too should make you think that there's a lot more happening than this is just some higher up that wants to get, you know, wants to put his dick in the hornet's nest and see what's going on. Because it's
why
very
that
clear.
Analogy?
Right, because they their stated intention is to go and find out what is happening to the people who are supposed to be terraforming this planet. There's some sort of accident.
Again, it's very fresh in my mind. So specifically, the series of events is that she gets brought back, woken up, put on trial essentially by this corp, not like official, like a legal trial, but she goes in front of the corporation and they're basically saying, you're lying, you're full of shit, there's no aliens, and we're not going to press charges, but we might. And we're taking away, you're not getting paid for that mission. And
that
we're
mission
taking away
80 years ago.
We're taking away your license as well. So these are all of the things that they establish. And then they approach her after that and are like, Remember how we told you we had colonists there and everything was fine? They're not reporting to us anymore. So we want you to go take a look. We're going to give you these guys with a bunch of guns. They're going to escort you there, and you're going to see what's going on.
Can she just say, like, you know, go fuck yourself?
Well, she could have, but then she didn't have a livelihood anymore at that point.
Oh, well.
Yeah, I think
that what happened to her cat?
It's fine.
Yeah.
Okay. I didn't see a cat in Aliens 3.
Yeah, I don't think they bring the cat with them.
Yeah, I think the cat stayed behind. No. The cat was not. The cat's not on the mission.
Good cat. Good cat. Hey, you're kidding.
Fine, I'll go, but I'm taking my cat.
No, I was about to say, did the core corporation take the cat too?
They just strapped a couple of them. It's because they strapped some laser cannons.
No license. To its back. We can press charges. Oh, we're taking your cat.
So yeah, you have Burke, played by Paul Reiser, going on this mission as well. And, you know, of course, he's that corporation presence. And again, throughout this entire movie, you have the overbearing, sort of shady corporation theme throughout the entire thing. And, of course, again, no even, like, mentioning of any sort of government. It's just all about how this corporation runs things. But they, of course, go to this planet, LV-426, with this troop of Marines.
Who themselves are apparently itching for a fight with the Xenomorphs, as they call them, or the Buggers. They've been getting into a lot of... I imagine what it is that these are more mercenaries working for a corporation. And much like, I mean, if it were today, you would have mercenaries that work for, you know, oil companies that need to go to the Middle East and protect their interests, right?
Yeah.
That's what these guys are doing in space. So they're going and putting down rebellions on other planets that are terraforming or going out and taking down other mining groups that are trying to... Like the prisoners... If shit were to hit the fan with the crew in Alien 3... They would send these guys in just to kill them all if they needed to. But they always have this idea in the back of their mind that one of these days they might actually meet this alien force, and they're really pumped about the idea, like they're going to go kick its ass. And then, of course,
Everybody dies. They get
there and find out that, yeah, they're no match. They have no way of actually fighting these things on their own terms, because it's not traditional warfare. It's not in any way traditional warfare for them.
So...
Yeah, they're just coming out of air vents and...
Yeah.
People's heads off, and
yeah, you got a crew of like what, 15? Would you say estimate?
Yeah, probably like 10, 15, something like that.
That very first encounter they have when they're exploring the facility wipes out a ton of them by their own incompetence. Mm-hmm. Even it's not just the aliens that take them all out. That is a very tense sequence, by the way, when they're exploring the facility.
Yeah,
I thought that was really well done.
Then it probably goes to show more of like how they're more of a mercenary force rather than like some sort of government sanctioned thing, because they're not exactly well disciplined. They're real rowdy and they're like shouting obscenities and stuff at each other. They're not exactly well disciplined in the heat of battle. There are people who panic quite quickly.
Mm-hmm.
But let's get into who we got here in the cast. We've got Michael Biehn. I hope I'm pronouncing his name correctly.
Yeah, I think that's right. Biehn or Biehn. He's also in Terminator.
Yeah, he's Kyle Reese. So yeah. James Cameron alum.
I think he's even in The Abyss too. I think he might be in that as well.
Hmm.
I don't know. Actually, James Cameron has a tendency to cast a lot of the same people over, in a lot of his movies. Bill Paxton, for example, is in this. Bill Paxton's also in Terminator. He's in True Lies. He even works, by the way, he is married to Catherine Bigelow. Catherine Bigelow is the director of Hurt Locker and Point Blank. And she uses Bill Paxton in a lot of her movies as well. So it's almost like the two of them have this really close friendship with, I'm assuming, because they seem to like Bill Paxton a lot.
Yeah.
And by the way, if there was a character I was alluding to as being my second favorite character, it's got to be Private Hudson, as played by Bill Paxton.
He's so annoying.
A fucking riot in this whole movie.
He's so obnoxious.
Yeah, and that's part of his charm. Maybe he's smart. He has a lot of good ideas when it actually comes down to their tactical decisions.
But he's
the
guy.
He survives about as long as anybody.
Yeah, and then from pretty early on, he's the guy who's like, no, we better leave. We better fucking go. We better get out of here.
Yeah.
And they should have. It's true. Mm-hmm. But then you also got, this is one other quick side note about Private Hudson. Bill Paxton, only man ever to be killed by both an alien and a predator.
That's an incredible feat.
Yeah.
Another fun fact about this, because I did look this up. The word fuck is used 23 times in Aliens. He says it 18 times. So he's at least that awesome.
Good for him. And then we mentioned Bishop already, Lance Henriksen. I do want to also mention that he is also in a couple of James Cameron movies. Mm-hmm. Specifically, the one that I remember most is Terminator. He's a detective in that movie, kind of a minor role. Yeah. But he's there.
Yeah. Well, you have Lieutenant Gorman. You have Vasquez. They seem to have some kind of, like, relationship, sort of. They toy this thing like the two of them are kind of, like, flirting with each other all the time, and at the end, they tragically sacrifice themselves simultaneously by blowing themselves up in a vent to kill a bunch of other aliens.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's a very nice gesture on their part. Do you have the, who is it? Is it Al Matthews plays Sergeant Apone?
Yeah.
He's a great character too. I like him because he's just sort of the kind of drill sergeant asshole that kind of keeps him in line. He's great. Although he doesn't really get that much, like once things get real, he's one of the guys that dies.
I'm actually looking at his page right now. He was also in Fifth Element, the movie we've already talked about.
Oh, no,
General Tudor? General Tudor? Is that
Ring a bell to anyone?
I don't have a picture.
Oh, he's the guy who like recruits Bruce Willis.
Oh, yes. Shoved into the fridge?
He gets shoved into the freezer.
Oh, yeah. That's right.
Oh, nice.
Oh, my gosh. I named it. Oh, I feel cool. Uh-huh. I was able to call the actor before you guys did.
Nice.
Bam.
So, one of the
quiz
cool
me
things.
About Fifth Element.
So, one of the cool things about Aliens is you actually get to see more about like, sort of the biology and the ecology of the xenomorphs. So you get to meet a queen for the first time,
yeah.
Which again is bringing back some pretty strong themes about motherhood, because you have this one giant creature who is doing all of the egg laying and like for the vessels that hold the facehuggers.
Yeah.
And like they kind of build this nest around it where they keep like they have a lot of the characters who either get killed or captured, and they kind of get like glued up onto the wall. It's really nasty.
Oh yeah, that's how they're going to build this big kind of army of alien. That's the way it's going to spread. And also they seem to show a little bit more intelligence, I guess you could say. There's that great scene at the end, and to jump around chronologically with the plot, at the end of it when she basically goes in there with the flamethrower and confronts the queen, like as she's basically having this showdown with the queen, the other ones are moving in from the sides. You see them kind of coming in from the sides, and then she waves it around and the queen calls them off. As if to say, like, let's neutralize this scenario, see if we can get her out of here before she burns down the whole colony that we're trying to build.
Mm. Yeah, there's definitely a bit more. Well, there's actually the possibility of coordination between all these creatures, because there's more than one this time.
Yeah.
But yeah, you can kind of see how they sort of function together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's so cool. Like, this is really nothing. This is all James Cameron building his own ideas, I guess, about where he thinks these aliens should even be capable of. And it's great, because at the same time, it's totally his vision, but it fits so well and helps establish. It's like this perfect continuation of this initial theory you have of Alien that feeds into aliens.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, anything else? Where else do we want to go with this?
I got a big point I want to talk about,
yeah.
Which would later feed into Prometheus, I guess, if we were going to talk about that. Which would be that in Alien, you know, they give you these really gorgeous teases about what's going on LV-426, this planet. Right? Because they see the crashed wreckage. And then they go inside and they see the alien, the superhuman alien, the uber alien that's in this thing that looks like it's a telescope, basically.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And Aliens, very subtly, gives you even more of that, because
it's
Newt's family that brings this plague into the colonies. Because the colonies themselves are families they establish.
Yeah.
They say that it was like 60 families that are used to run this big operation that's trying to pump an atmosphere onto this planet.
Mm-hmm.
And they show them as sort of like settlers or something, or surveyors, and they're like, oh, hey, look at this crazy thing we found. And it's the exact same horseshoe-shaped alien ship.
Huh.
And all you see, from that point, all you see is that the dad goes out, and then he stumbles back to the vehicle and collapses there. And there's this big moment where she screams and looks down and sees that he's, like, been infected with a hugger. He's got the face hugger.
Yeah.
So he's the one that's going to be the initial seed that goes into their colony and just gets everybody slaughtered. And again, because they don't know. They don't have any idea of what the hell's going on. They
right.
thought this was safe.
Yeah.
They put this colony on there for some reason, and these were just the first, you know, idiots to stumble across it. So, yeah. I thought that was really interesting. And that's all about Prometheus, is about how that ship gets there in the first place. It's beautiful to see them actually give you that information. And it's nice to see that both of the first two Alien films were invested in telling you what happened there.
Yeah, it's nice that both these movies so far have acknowledged this larger universe, this larger thing that's happening. Whereas, you know, it's still telling and very focused on their one story, you get these glimpses of everything else that might be going on.
Mm-hmm.
There's that implication that it's not just isolated to the stories that you're seeing.
Yeah. So, I mean, that kind of wraps up. I think we talked a lot about this. I think the first one is pure horror. This is amazing action.
Mm-hmm.
This is a James Cameron spectacle. The set pieces are killer throughout the whole thing. There's the great showdown where she's in the lift, the forklift thing, fighting the
clone. Oh, yeah.
That's really cool. Bishop's death is one of the most gruesome things the series has ever shown, in spite of the fact that it's an android. Mm. You know? It's so cool. I really like it.
Oh, and we should mention that she's not the only one to escape this time around. They escape with her and Hicks and Newt all escape together.
Yep. That is actually kind of a funny thing, is that Newt is the one that is able to survive. She survived for apparently weeks there.
Yeah, holed up in their little fortress.
Nobody else, colony. Like all these Marines, badass Marines, get mowed down and she's still going.
It is kind of funny that this symbol of a nuclear family is the one who's escaping.
That's a beautiful point. I actually never really thought about that one.
But anyway, let's close it out there. And then next time we'll do Alien 3. All right, and that'll wrap up this Space World. In just a day or two, we'll be posting the next regular show for the month of May, which will be the Pokemon show. So, thanks for listening, everybody.